how much sleep is optimal?
It depends on the person. The optimal amount of sleep varies between individuals, but you're looking to get at least 7 hours sleep, so somewhere between 7 and 9 hours, depending on who you are.
Does sleep affect our skin?
So sleep is, we always begin to think about sleep as the part where the body detoxifies itself. So we go into a rest stage, our brain detoxifies chemicals that are built over the day, so does the rest of our body. So obviously if you have too little sleep, you don't get rid of those toxins as quickly as you should do, or they may start to build up. And therefore that has an impact on a whole heap of things, including your skin condition and just the stress of your body.
What are free radicals?
So free radicals are just very reactive molecules. So if they bump into another molecule in our body, they'll change that other molecule. They might even become part of that other molecule. And so the one we all really look at is actually free radical oxygen species, because our genetic code hates free radicals. And the cell keeps all your genetic information away from those free radicals. But you know, they still occur. When a free radical hits a piece of DNA, it'll change the genetic code. And then the cell has to repair that change in the genetic code. But as we get older, we become less able to do that, and we get more and more mutations into our genetic code. So free radicals are a really driving force of many of the aging pathologies that we see.
Should we use a barrier cream?
So when you use a fatigue barrier product, you're going to reduce the amount of toxins in the air, including free radicals, from getting into your cells. And we also put things called reductants or antioxidants in there, and that mops up many of those free radicals. That's the main purpose of an antioxidant, to mop up free radicals.
Is oil the same as sebum?
Sebum is just a natural oil that we excrete through the hair follicles in our skin. So it's what makes our hair not dry, makes it slightly oily, and it's a natural process. So it keeps the skin healthy, not looking so dry. Too much of it though will make you a bit glossy, and you'll see oily skin or oily hair.
How does sebum affect our skin?
So sebum is a natural oil, and it really is there to coat our skin and protect it from some of the environmental damaging agents that we'd otherwise be exposed to. If you don't make enough sebum, you end up with dry looking skin. And if you make too much of it, you will look like you've got oily skin, but it will also have the possibility to plug some of those hair follicles. And that's when you can drive things like acne formation.
Who do you admire in cancer and aging research?
Yeah, so I would say in the aging area, you know, I've always followed closely the work of Professor David Sinclair, who really has brought aging to the forefront of the research community and the public's mind, and the idea that it is probably treatable as a condition, or at least can be slowed down. In the area of cancer, we're probably talking about Professor Sir David Lane, who is in Singapore now, and he really discovered what we call the guardian angel gene. So he discovered the gene that protects us from getting cancer in the first place.
How did you collaborate with David Sinclair?
So scientists, we collaborate, and that's part of what we do to get the scientific answer. So my lab can't do every experiment possible to answer the question. So when we need other people with the skill sets, we'll team up with them. And in the case of our last paper, we teamed up with David Sinclair's laboratory in the US. And so that work was really understanding. We were looking at children with a severe aging syndrome. That means that by the time they're in their early teens, they look like they're maybe in their 70s, 80s, and they have all the conditions. And we were trying to figure out why these certain children were getting this disease. And we were looking at how the mutant, the single mutant these children carry, and one of the genes was causing that disease. And so we worked with David Sinclair to answer that question and understand what was driving that disease. And in fact, we showed it as predicted, that it was a failure of the DNA repair system in these children that was driving them to age really rapidly.
What is the guardian angel gene?
So the guardian angel gene is a really critical part of the DNA damage response system. And so what it really does, in an essence, is that if you receive genetic damage to a cell, there is a chance that that cell will lose its genetic code and that it could become a cancer. Now, what P53 does is actually, if it thinks that this is occurring, if the damage is too great to be repaired correctly, then the P53 gene will tell that cell to commit suicide. So it will, the cell will deliberately start a program which will destroy that cell and make it non-viable, and the cell will die.
Is that why we peel when sunburned?
Exactly. That's the same. Sunburn is a very obvious manifestation of the P53 gene causing mass suicide of your skin cells.
Where can people go to learn more?
You know, that's an interesting question, because there is actually no website. If you want some more general information, David Sinclair has written a couple of really insightful books on the subject, and they're definitely worth reading. But just now, there is actually no website that you can come and really look. You can look up scientific papers, but they wouldn't make sense to most people other than scientists. But if you're going to have a look at the where we stand in the state of play just now, it's David Sinclair has written some really good books on this.
Who do you look up to?
I guess the person, it's a bit corny perhaps, it was really drove me into science was David Attenborough. You know, I remember way back in the UK, all the BBC One Nature shows, and I was addicted to them. So that was the really thing that drove my first interest in life, and how life works, and how, you know, diseases form, etc. So that really pioneered my decision on what I was going to do at university.
How did you get where you are today?
So my career path has been a little unusual, but it's probably worked in a good way for me. So I started off studying bacteria, which everyone knows causes food poisoning and things like that. So I did my PhD in microbiology. I then went on and started working on another form of life on the planet called the archaea. And archaea are best known for living in very extreme environments, like volcanoes. So the one we worked on was called Sulfobus solitaricus, and it lived in boiling sulfuric acid pools in volcanic regions around the world. And the reason we were really interested in these type of organisms is actually very closely related to us, into the whole eukaryotes, but they're just a bit simpler. So we're trying to understand how these organisms could grow and boil in sulfuric acid and protect their genetic code. And that really led us to the discovery of a new family of proteins called the SSBs in humans. And so when we discovered that and worked out what they were doing, that really led me into then moving into cancer biology and trying to understand what went wrong with these proteins when we got cancer. And we've developed now drug against this family of proteins in human cancers, and that drug goes into clinical trials later this year.
What have you been working on recently?
So one of the big things that we've accomplished in the last few months is really we turned a lot of our attention onto coronavirus. And there was really reasons why we were able to do that. And so we started working on a drug. So we were able to actually screen up to 2 billion compounds at once in our laboratory now. So we have a very powerful screening facility. So we then started looking for drugs that might work in coronavirus. And we discovered a target in coronavirus. We made a drug against that target, and then we've successfully killed the virus. So we're pretty excited about that, and that's we're going to be moving further towards that. We should be in patients, could be in patients within 4 to 6 weeks with this drug. So we're pretty excited about this.
How do you keep motivated?
I never ask that question of myself, and I've been at a point when I've never been motivated. You know, we're pretty lucky as scientists. I'll see every week something that no one else in the world has ever seen before, ever. And the same with my team. So you're always pushing forward, you're always answering the next question. Sometimes the funding is what we find the hardest, because I probably spend 3/4 of my time trying to find money, and getting motivated for that can be difficult. But the actual science itself, you know, we're discovering some amazing things, we're developing new drugs to change the lives of patients. You know, even the serum, the Epigen serum, was an amazing experience of actually looking at the whole industry, starting from the ground up, and actually seeing how we were making a huge difference to people's lives. And that was a very fast, compared to a drug to market, it was very fast how we got this into people and got the response from people. But that was a pretty exciting experience doing that.
How can people help with CAF funding?
So our laboratory has a foundation called the Cancer and Aging Research Foundation. And if you go to the website, which is carf.org.au, you can donate there, or you can contact me directly at Queensland University of Technology, and we can speak and you can come and visit. And we're very happy for people to donate to our work, because as I said, fundraising is the biggest and hardest challenge that we face as scientists, maintaining those income year after year after year. So if you're interested in being involved in donating money, you can either go to our website, carf.org.au, or you can buy our serum, or you can buy our coffee. You know, it's lots of ways to do it.
How do you deal with stress?
It's not very stressful handling a team of scientists. You know, we've got 50 people in our team, one of the largest research groups in Australia. But scientists are all motivated. You know, they, as I said in my previous question, they're seeing things every week that no one else has ever seen. They're driving towards an answer, they're driving towards a treatment or another impact that will influence people's lives. You know, we can leave, probably when we retire or pass away, we can actually leave a legacy that is here forever in the form of scientific knowledge or a new treatment.
Why are you so passionate about cancer and aging research?
We're trying to make a difference. You know, we're developing new therapeutics. You know, we've talked about that we have a cancer drug that's going to hit clinical trials later on this year. We also have a coronavirus drug that we hope will get into patients in a few months' time. We're working on an anti-aging drug, which will slow down the aging. So effectively make you not necessarily live too much longer, but make you live healthier into your 80s. So stop osteoporosis, Alzheimer's, etc. And so all those things, you know, they're all, if they work, they change a society, they change how people live, they change our healthcare system and our old age care system. And so, you know, that drives what we do every day.
How do you deal with failure?
Scientists can handle failure. You wouldn't get very far if you can handle failure in science. Now, probably about 90% of all the experiments we do will fail, but the 10% are the ones we're driving forward. So you remember when we do an experiment, we're the first person to do that experiment in the world ever. And they'll more often fail on the first time, and you'll just alter the conditions of the experiment until you get it right. Because we're dealing with things down to the atom level here. So we're dealing with very fine detail, and it takes a while to get that fine detail correct. So we're pretty good with failure. You know, in the Australian healthcare system, the success rate of grants to the federal government is only 5%. So 95% of us will not get grants. So there's 95% failures there. You wouldn't get very far in science if you couldn't handle failure. So we're all experts.
How do you celebrate success?
Success is normally, I guess, a moving goal for us. When we do have something really big, we'll have the champagne and everything like that. But we celebrate all the time. But, you know, once you've answered one question in science, it opens up the next question. You know, there's not a wall there where you hit that wall and you've answered it all and that's it. It then raises the next question and then you, so you're continually moving and your goal of success is continually moving. But when we do hit big ones, the champagne does come out.
What advice would you give your younger self?
I don't know if I'd give myself any advice. You know, I've never actually been a person driven by careers. You know, I've actually never applied for a job in my life. I've always been offered jobs as I've gone through. And so I guess fate has driven me to this point, and fate's been reasonably good to me, so I can't complain. Old self, you know, I have nothing to regret, so yeah.